Lacrimata by Storm Constantine. He breathed a stream of stars, each mote of light igniting in his lungs, bringing a hot, sweet taste to his tongue. Space, time, what are these trifles? Solanates di Cavagni, navigator of the imperial trader ship Dea Brava, coasted the warp tides of neural ecstasy, oblivious of all save his own blistering responses and the guiding screamlight of the Astronomicon, the Emperor's own psychic beacon, searing through the heat of chaos. He and the ship were one, a shining world speeding through the warp, his consciousness the benign god that nourished it. Real space drop, minus 15. Solanates realigned consciousness. The warp screen on the helm just in front of him was pulsing dully, displaying a convulsion of lesser eddies in the immaterium outside. Nothing too worrying. He glanced upwards through the translucent plasmacrist of the navigation blister into an aching tumult of colour and optical noise. This was overlapped by his warp sight, courtesy of his third eye, a mutation peculiar to navigators, which transmuted the chaotic fluidium of warp space into recognizable symbols. A phantom of his mother's face gaped inches from the translucent blister, evoking the thought response, "Damn, I forgot the call." He had meant to ask Shivania, ship's astropath, to transmit a message back to Earth for him before the jump into warp space. He knew Letitia, his mother, fretted during his absence more than she did for any other members of the family. Out of consideration, he always sent brief communications whenever he remembered. Now, some deep shred of guilt within his mind had projected a thought form into the warp, which was currently scratching disconsolately at the ship itself, as if trying to reach him. Real space drop, minus 10. He felt Dea Brava stir around him, as the automatic real space navigational functions prepared to relieve him from duty. She was a witch queen of the heavens, was Brava. A sleek little strumpet, one of many owned by the affluent Phidias merchant family, who for centuries had enjoyed a lucrative franchise from the Imperial Administratum. Solanates had been working for Clan Phidias for some time now, following injuries incurred during military service. He'd warp-piloted the battlecruiser Vale of Hecate, a crueler, less beautiful lady than Dea Brava, for 3 missions before a hideous accident during what should have been a routine purge of mercantile dissidents, had decimated the crew and left Solanates little more than a disassembled jumble of bones within a leaking bag of flesh. Mercifully, because of his family's prestige, he'd immediately received the best of medical attention, thorough reconsecration, and a frozen trip home to recuperate. The healing had been a long, wearing process, and his body still creaked with frissons of old pain occasionally. He comforted himself with the thought that one day the Administratum would accept his reapplication for duty, deciding at last his faculties were once more sharp and steady enough to entrust with the welfare of a battlecruiser. Solanates, though still mourning the thrill of such commissions, also suspected his yearnings to return to the Imperial fleet were slightly insane. He had a cozy niche within the Phidias fleet, and the Dea Brava was a dream to work with. Over the 3 ship-time years he'd spent in her company, he had come to appreciate her personality. Her totem was one of recklessness and adventure. Perhaps, like himself, she fretted impatiently at being confined to the routine function of cargo carrier. The Phantom of Letitia lost its hold on the slick surface of the blister and was churned into the amorphous boiling that Dea Brava left in her wake. Solonate became aware of physical pain. His neck was playing up again. That was another thing he'd meant to do before entering warp space, consult the medic about this problem. It had not been an easy trip out this time all round. He would not be sorry to get home. One more drop, and then...
Real space. Drop. Minus. 5.
Solonate smiled. The warp portal into real space was a stunner this time. Dea Brava was dwarfed by an incredible apparition in the void ahead. Brazen gates miles high, miles wide, encrusted with elaborate carvings. Giant beasts, their heads invisible in a smoke of stars, blew mammoth horns as if to bid the ship farewell with a star-shattering fanfare. Solonate shook his head. Was it his own influence, he wondered, or the psychic fluidium-bending whim of another navigator, bored after a long stint alone? Perhaps the illusion had been spawned by the creative residue of some dazed Eldar poet who'd once coasted the warp tides, coaxing dreams to reality. Whatever, someone, somewhere, liked to leave their own signature upon the warp. 3 drops back, he'd cruised the ship through a yawning, fang-toothed mouth, whose gullet delivered him into real space near one of the Ministorum administrative worlds. Someone with a sense of humour, maybe. The sudden, and thankfully brief, spasm of nausea vibrated through his flesh as Dea Brava left the warp. He couldn't resist glancing over his shoulder as he pulled his bandana back into place over his third eye. There were no mammoth gates closing behind the ship's tail. Of course not. Journey completed. Solonate touched a sequence of protective runes about his control helm and then lightly laid his fingers against his brow.
I thank thee, Lord Emperor, divine father of all that lives, for thy endless love that reacheth out to the corners of forever and carries us all, thy children, in safety. Blessings and respect.
He rubbed his eyes when the prayer of thanks was recited and began to unstrap himself from the navigator's pod. His neck was singing in agony now. It would have to be seen to before the next warp shift. Whatever protections Dea Brava might have, Solonates was always deeply relieved when they dropped back into real space, even if he never consciously admitted it. Sometimes the things he saw out there were just too tempting. One sleep time, he'd had a nightmare about the Astronomicon suddenly blipping away to nothingness, leaving him alone without guidance, in a ship screaming blindly into entropy. He'd woken up sweating and pouring the air, his ultimate fear being that his dream self, despite being terrified, had also enjoyed a wild exultation. He had yearned for the final embrace of chaos. If his subconscious toyed with such sentiments in sleep, Solonates was all too aware of how vulnerable he was in the warp. But then, who wasn't? He'd seen the burnouts, shielded by their families, newly released from the Ministorum retreats, where the priesthood tried to launder the frazzled brains of those who succumbed. It was a risky business he was involved in. His lifeblood. Solonates descended to the walkway leading to the Camera Recreata, rubbing his neck as he walked. It was always the same, this aftermath. Vague depression. Insecurity. He knew very well by the time the next warp shift was due, he'd be aching to ride the stuff of chaos once more. Captain Graham Phidias was giving in to his usual ritual of inspecting the cargo. Now they'd dropped back into real space. He was aware that this was slightly neurotic behaviour. Dea Brava herself would know if anything was amiss, but could never talk himself out of doing it. Maybe, with time, his concerns would lessen. He was a young man, and the Brava, one of his family's smaller vessels, had not long been entrusted into his care. Like Solonates, he was eager to return home. There'd been a series of mishaps this trip, an unexpected bout of illness amongst the crew, a near miss with a warp storm near the gates of Hovia Nesta. Problems with the consignment of goods on Phaeton South had caused an irritating delay, thus upsetting the receivers on the following drop. Problems, problems. Graen was also concerned about the ship's new astropath, Shivania. This was her first trip out with the Dea Brava, her first trip aboard any spacefaring vessel, in fact. She had been assigned to take over from old Bassos, the previous astropath, who'd been with the Phidias family all his working life. Astropaths were essential to communication aboard ship, and Graen felt uneasy about the apparent delicacy of the girl, her strange air of fainness. He had trusted Bassos implicitly, who had been a robust and dependable creature. Graen mistrusted Shivania's capability, despite the impressive references with which she'd been dispatched from the Scholastica of Adeptus Astra Telepathica. She seemed little more than a child, although, Graen had to admit, however grudgingly, she had a keen mind. If anything, her ability to transmit and receive information surpassed Bassos's considerably. His misgivings were instinctual, but until he could identify some fault or another, he had no proper cause for complaint. As he walked through the cargo hold, Graen unconsciously ran his fingers fondly over the ribs of the vault. Very quickly, the ship had seemed to become part of his soul. He felt her movements and sighs, each creak and moan, as if he made them himself. Her arched vaults, plated in dull black plasteel, were thickly inscribed with protective runes and totems. She was a virtual fortress. As he'd expected, everything was in order. He knew it was apprehension about the next cargo that was making him jittery. Maybe it was an honour that his father trusted him enough to take the job on. But Graen suspected even the most experienced captain would think twice about stowing a consignment of Lacrimata on board. Naturally, most of the legends surrounding it would be exaggerated, but unnerved by the mishaps he'd had to deal with already on this trip, Graen fought a superstitious fear that picking up the Lacrimata would only precipitate further dangers. Taking one last look around, Graen forced himself to leave the hold and make his way to the Camera Recreata. All Phidias ships had a member of the Ministerium on board, so that cleansing rituals could be performed after each warp shift. As well as being effective in cleaning away any psychic debris, it also boosted the morale of the crew. He met Solonates in the passageway two decks up. Considering the navigator was looking as fey as Shivania nowadays, navigators were all inclined to pellucid delicacy, but Solonate's huge dark eyes were almost feverish. Graen made a small, formal bow, which jerked the navigator's mouth into a smile, not entirely devoid of mockery.
"Hard time, Cavagni?"
"No."
"You look tired."
"I am tired."
Solonates had to quell resentment of the captain's officious manner occasionally. What did he expect? His navigators to come bursting out of the blister, leaping with joy and vitality? Phidias looked offended by his tone, however, so Solonates smiled to make amends.
"I always look tired after a drop."
"What's wrong with your neck?"
Solonates abruptly dropped his hand.
"Nothing much."
"Well, get it seen to."
Graen attempted what was clearly supposed to be a fatherly smile, but which Solonates meanly interpreted as condescension.
"Well, we mustn't keep Brother Gabrius waiting."
Solonates shook his head wearily at the captain's retreating back and followed him up to the wreck.
"Patience, patience," he told himself.
Dea Brava was coasting serenely towards a cool blue gem of a world, which could already be seen through the narrow arched ports of the wreck. Solonates could barely concentrate on the words of Brother Gabrius's benedictions, his eyes constantly drifting towards the world they were approaching. He knew Phidias was making a pickup here rather than a delivery, and that it was a cargo the Phidias clan were especially eager to get their hands on. Because of it, everyone had been promised a bonus when they returned home. Solonates presumed this was to override any misgivings the crew might feel about shining confined space with Lacrimata, a potentially destructive material. Personally, he felt no apprehension. Recorded incidents of fatality had all derived from negligence, which certainly wasn't one of Phidias's failings. Solonates never knew whether to respect or be annoyed by the captain's nitpicking. He was not that much older than Phidias, yet sometimes Solonates had noticed a jarring immaturity in the captain, which in bitter moments he felt derived from Graham's lack of hardship in life. The captain tried hard to establish comradeship with his navigator, which Solonates was well aware of, but neither of them could ever relax enough for friendship to develop. Solonates felt it was something to do with his mutation, ignorant of how adept he was at freezing people off. Typically, Graham asked Solonates if he'd like to accompany him down to the planet's surface. Solonates winced inside as the captain made awkward references to the delights to be found below. Salome Nigra was one of those legendary places of the space lanes, rumoured to be home to a thousand illicit pleasures, all of which were available to discerning travellers for an appropriate fee. Solonates, an unfailing cynic, perhaps a burdensome trait of his kind, knew it was the inhabitants of the planet herself who had engineered and now maintained this reputation. He considered it to be a tourist retreat, of the most tawdry kind, and would have preferred to curl into his sleep cell for a well-earned rest, rather than force himself to endure the pantomime of being shocked and delighted by what they might find below. Phidias, however, insisted the trip would do Solonates good, and even in the face of mordant uninterest, kept on insisting until the navigator gave in. "We can visit our contact, Guido Palama, organize delivery of the cargo, and then the rest of the drop is ours," Graham said, with a boyish grin, which Solonates had to admit was almost endearing in its innocence.
"If you like, though, as you noticed, I'm in a little pain."
"Your totems look worn, Sol. Perhaps you should have them renewed. I'm sure Gabrius could do that for you before—"
Solonates' hand abruptly clutched the Navis Nobilitae amulets hanging from his throat.
"At the risk of sounding irreverent, it is not a spiritual injury," he said,
stemming any sharpness in his voice.
"An automatic rub should do the trick. I intended to visit Hermes Foss before the last drop, but it slipped my mind. Relic of old duty, you know."
Graham nodded gravely. He barely spoke of Solonates' previous commission, emitting a restraint that made Solonates feel vaguely like a defrocked priest. Often he wished people would just ask him blatant questions about his past and be humanly curious. Inside, he needed to talk about it. But he suspected old man Phidias had charged everybody with the dire command not to upset him in any way by raking up old hurts. Gomery Phidias was a good friend of Solonates's own father. The commission had been a favour.
"Well,"
Graham said brightly, rubbing his hands together, "maybe we can find you a sweet young Hetaria, gifted in the arts of massage. As you know, the city of Assyrion is famed for its therapy shrines. A far more stimulating experience than having old Foss grinding away at your bones, eh, Sol?" He laughed. Solonates smiled thinly and inclined his head.
"As long as we carefully inspect the aromatics before submitting to the treatment, of course."
He felt a weak surge of expectation. Perhaps the planetfall wouldn't be as grueling as he'd feared. Several other crew members were gathered in the shuttle intent on visiting Assyrian, which caused a certain amount of good-natured mockery. Gabrius settled himself fussily into a seat, pretending to be affronted.
"May your tongues be black," he said grandly. "All I seek is an assortment of puissant fumes, This you all know, so core away as you like. We'll see the grins wiped from your faces when we're back in the warp, and only my incenses keep the effluent of chaos from your sweet, untainted minds. He wriggled his considerable frame into a comfortable position. Come, pilot, let's away. Night spreads her black feathered fan upon the bosom of Assyrian, and I, for one, want to be on the streets before the Essence Splendors close shop. Well said, brother, Graham agreed. Pilot, all are aboard. Activate the elementals of the portals. The cramped shuttle was filled with the excited atmosphere generated by those who expected to sample exquisite dissipations in the near future. The pilot acknowledged his captain's request with a carefree gesture and made to seal the ports. A sharp cry stayed his hand.
Hold!
Someone was scrambling in through the doorway in a flutter of Viridian robes. It was the astropath, Shivania.
Shivania, Graham said, unable to control his surprise. I really don't think Assyrian is the sort of place.
Enough, Captain. I have eyes in the back of my head, if not the front. I'll be safe enough, especially with all these gallants to protect me.
None of the party looked especially flattered by that, chaperoning a blind girl not having been on their agenda for the evening. The shuttle fell ominously quiet. Shivania seemed oblivious of the response or else ignored it. She found her way to a seat as nimbly as any sighted person, turning her head back at Graham. She was wearing an embroidered mask over the upper part of her face. The two thread-woven eyes stared at the captain owlishly.
"You're not going to deny me permission, are you, sir?" she asked sweetly.
"Well, we do have business," Graham began in the voice of someone who was wondering how he could eject the girl without offending her.
"Oh, leave her be," Solonate said. "I'll be glad to offer you my arm, Shivania."
He smiled at the captain.
"What about your neck?" Graham asked.
He looked disappointed, if not mortified. Solonate shrugged.
"It can wait. You've all been cooped up for weeks. I, for one, would not deny a person the chance to stretch their legs on solid ground if they desire it."
"I thank you, Navigator, for your courtesy," Shivania said formally. But there was laughter in her voice, mocking laughter.
She directed the needle of her attention at the priest.
"Ministerium duties, planetside, brother."
Gabrius shifted uncomfortably.
"Of a kind, naturally, I would have offered to accompany you, but..."
he began, but Graham silenced his apologies.
"Come, come. The matter is settled. Let's fly."
Assyrian was a remarkable confection of a place. Her streets were paved in pearled marble. Her towers rose, tier upon tier, aflutter with the pennants advertising which services could be found within. Sulky eyes, painted on silk, gazed through laced fingers, the perfumed breezes causing them to ripple as if alive. Graham had already made up his mind he wanted the Navigator with him when he visited the Palama residence, so Shivania ended up joining them. Rather than use public transport, the captain insisted they walk on foot to admire the city sights. Solonates was disappointed. The main form of conveyance was provided by elegant open carriages drawn by beasts of burden native to the planet, creatures that seemed to be an absurd blend of camel and wild dog. He would have liked to ride one. Perhaps later he and the astropath could hire one for a while. Shivania, extending her heightened senses to encompass all they passed, kept up an awed commentary, which Solonitz could tell soon began to get on Graham's nerves. Palama House was situated in the heart of the Aromatics District, a sweeping, pale leviathan of a residence, with many low, sprawling workshops to the rear. The air was so filled with the reek of perfume blending, Solonates and Graham's eyes began to water profusely. Shivania,
being blind, did not experience this discomfort. Presenting themselves at the soaring main entrance, its elegance enhanced by its classical simplicity, Graham and his companions were shown by an imperious servant into an understated yet exquisitely furnished salon near the front of the house. Refreshment was brought, pale, fragranced wine and tender wafers perfumed with local flower essences. Shivania exclaimed that Salome Nigra must be a world created solely for the pleasure of astropaths. The stimulus is for the nose. The nose, she enthused. Who needs physical sight in such a place? Graham and Solonates, still wiping their eyes with kerchiefs, were inclined to agree with her. Guido Palomar made a grand entrance after a suitable time had elapsed. He was a tall, well-built man, his handsome face set in a perpetual smile. After a short, polite inquiry as to his visitor's journey, health, and opinions of the city, he settled immediately to business. "So," he said, leaning back in his silk-cushioned chair, "you essay an entreaty to the Dark Lady of Nepenthe." He helped himself to a biscuit, nibbling thoughtfully. Graham and Solonates had both leaned forward expectantly. "My family have captured the essences of the mystic flower for centuries," he continued. "Mysteria hypno morta. A prayer, a name, a prayer," he sighed. "We call her the Lacrimata, the moon skin, the last breath of a favored concubine, Mysteria, dark maid of the hidden caves, fragrant, fragile bloom, whose fleeting kiss is spiritual joy, whose bitter juice is oblivion." He smiled. The speech was obviously a sales pitch, Solonates thought. However, the plain truth would be lacking in romance. The Palamas grew a rare flower in underground catacombs, whose perfume was highly narcotic and whose essential oil was a deadly poison if ingested. It could also be sold for ridiculous amounts throughout the Imperium. Naturally, such an honest description would not have excited Graham's desire for purchase as much, but then why bother anyway? The Palamas were rigidly discerning about who they dealt with in the world of commerce. The fact that Graham was here at all indicated the sale had already been finalized with the Phidias clan back on Earth. Graham was just a courier. Guido Palama obviously liked to romance his merchandise. Solonates noticed Palama was looking at him keenly. "Naturally, you wish to see for yourselves," their host said with a wider smile. The catacombs were accessible via a single door in the heart of the Palama workshops. Violet glow strips illuminated the worn stone steps that led downwards into a damp murk. Shivania slipped her arm through Solonates's as they descended. "Can you smell her?" she whispered. The navigator could feel her trembling. "Is this what you came down here for?" he asked in an undertone. It was possible. Astropaths, being psychic and therefore mystically inclined, would be bound to be interested in the Lacrimata. Shivania squeezed his arm. She did not answer. "Here, the beds of lesser maidens," Palama intoned when they reached the bottom. Terraces of peaty soil, black as grave dirt, swept away into the dimness, micered with pale stars. The blooms themselves. "Mysteria Puella," Palama said. "She is destined for the warm throats of ladies of the grand houses of all the worlds. A decoration merely mimicking the forbidden sensuality of her elder sister." He plucked a single bloom and presented it to Shivania. "For you, my dear, press her well between the pages of your Mia Libra, and she will greet you with a benediction whenever you go to inscribe your meditations." "Thank you, sir," Shivania said. She sniffed the flower cautiously.
Here, Solanates.
He leaned over to sample the perfume. Its first note was bright and fruity, descending for a brief flirtation with the carnal bloom of musk before rising to a final crescendo of riotous spring flowers.
Excellent. You will look forward to your inscriptions from now on, I think.
Palama led them further into the breathing dark. Solanates's skin prickled with a weird excitement. He felt as if a thousand sighing creatures of the night were shifting restlessly on black satin couches around him. Vampire beauty, concealed from sight beneath a venomous mat of narcotic flower flesh.
And here, Palama whispered reverently ahead of them, the boudoir of the lady herself. Have care, my friends. She sleeps and dreams.
Solanates heard Graham gasp. He himself was holding his breath, but not for long. Ahead of them, a gloomy crypt spread into infinity, its tiers snaking between massive columns and arches. Each tier was overflowing, indeed gravid, cancerous and alive, with convolutions of shimmering, fleshy whirls. Bloom upon bloom crawled over their sisters, engulfing, tumbling, sending out whippy suckers festooned with tumescent buds. And the perfume. Solanates had to suppress a groan. The sorcerous elixir of it seethed and flexed upon the tongue, the throat, reaching down with limber fingers to the belly and groin. No simple cadence here, but a hectic symphony of aromatic notes. The first was fruity too, but this was the overripe, giddy eruption of autumn in full swell, sweeping lustily down to a dark woodland of musk and sandal spiced with civet and ambergris. Rising orgasmically to the exuberant scream of spring, jasmine, asphodel, and creamy rose, flowers of the flesh. Solanate swallowed thickly, dizzy with the aroma that was playing havoc with his sense of reality, never mind his more carnal senses. At his side, Shivania was motionless. Her touch had become vague upon his arm. Palama let them all sample the agonizing ecstasy of it for a few moments before clearing his throat and saying,
Well, I trust you are satisfied, Captain Phidias. Perhaps we can repair to the salon once more to arrange delivery of your consignment.
Rather overcome and silent because of it, Graham, Solanates, and Shivania eventually emerged into the street once more. Shivania toyed gently with the bloom Palama had given her, settling it safely behind a talismanic pin on her robes. They reached the tourist quarter, almost unaware of how they had got there. Cafes and bars lined streets that radiated out from quaint squares, discreet alleys lined with globes of deep red light leading to areas of more lascivious delights. The aroma of cooking food did something to dispel the enchantment of Palama's crypt, and Solanate suggested the three of them choose one of the cafes to sample local cuisine. Shivania agreed enthusiastically, but Graham, looking sheepish, mumbled something about going to find the rest of their party. Solanates, fighting the urge to poke fun and discomfort the captain, merely smiled and told him he and Shivania would meet him back at the spaceport in 3 hours ship's time. Graham gratefully scuttled off down one of the alleys.
Are you sure you don't want to go with him?
Shivania asked, clearly aware of what Graham was looking for.
I don't mind. I'll be quite happy sitting here alone, really.
No, Solanates insisted, firmly tucking the girl's hand through his elbow. Come along. This looks an interesting place. Glazed fowl hanging everywhere. Take a sniff.
Shivania laughed delightedly, and they went inside.
I wish I could see you, Shivania said wistfully, as they sat drinking a dessert beverage after the meal. I mean, really see you. Your aura is handsome, Navigator, and yet...
She shrugged.
Silly of me, It must be the effect of this little lady here. She touched the bloom in her robes. I suppose I must be ugly to you, blind as a cave bat as I am.
Shivania, stop that, Solonate said.
You are a very pretty girl, as well you know, and I am a rather haggard spectre of a man. Drink your dessert. You haven't seen me without this, she said mournfully, indicating her mask. So show me then. You won't scream.
Solonate laughed. She was joking, of course. Only behind my hand. I'm not squeamish, Shivania, really. Impulsively, she reached up and untied the strings of her mask, lowering it swiftly with an air of challenge. Her eyelids drooped over blind, milky orbs sunk deep into her skull, as if shrunken. Thin, almost pencil-drawn brows shadowed the sockets. It was not gruesome, however, which Solonets knew the girl must be aware of. A test, then? Was she inviting a physical response from him? Disgusting, he said with a laugh. Dress yourself at once. She smiled and replaced the mask.
I could ask you to remove yours, Navigator, but there'd be little point. Doesn't it itch, having to keep the eye under a band all the time?
Not at all. Would you be able to see into the warp now, from here, if you removed it and opened the eye? What I would see is the other world of our reality. In a place like this, it might be educational, but rather upsetting, I feel.
Strange. I wouldn't have thought you'd be so squeamish.
I'm not. Just careful. So tell me, what was your interest in coming down here? You intended to accompany Phidias to his client all along, of course.
Your warp sight lends you a sharp perception, Navigator, Shivania replied.
She was enjoying herself immensely, he could see. She sipped her drink daintily.
Lacrimata is a legend. I was curious. Also, if the fables surrounding it are true, it possesses innumerable properties which haven't even been guessed at yet.
Really? And which of these legends concern you?
Shivania laughed. You sound like an inquisitor, Navigator. Aren't I allowed a girlish curiosity?
Allowed it, certainly. But I doubt that is your motivation. She shrugged.
The interest was casual, really. It was only a rumour. I heard the Lacrimata stimulates psychic sight, far beyond what a humble astropath can imagine.
She shrugged again, jerkily. However, I've smelled the stuff now, and my inner sight has not improved significantly. I should hope not, Solonates exclaimed. Whatever properties the perfume has, it is also very dangerous, and possibly attractive to hostile forces.
And that, dear Navigator, is probably just as much a fable as any other connected with Lacrimata. Palama has to sell the stuff, doesn't he? It was all just talk.
Solonates remembered the effect the Lacrimata flowers had had on him, and suppressed a shudder. He did not share Shivania's apparent scepticism.
Anyway, I'm bored with the subject, she said. I'm more interested in you. How old are your injuries?
What? Shivania smiled slyly.
Oh, come now, Navigator. You should know I see more than others, Lacrimata or not. Your aura has scars. How did you get them, and where?
Solonates was impressed.
It happened what seems a long time ago. And my name is Solonates, remember?
She shrugged. Well? By the time he'd finished pouring out his life history to the girl, they had scant minutes to return to the rendezvous point with the others from the Brava. Solonates felt as giddy as an excited boy as they hurried through the streets, purged and renewed. He'd been waiting for someone with whom he could exercise the past to come into his life. Free from the drippings of cloying pity,
Whoever would have thought this young, quirky girl would be the one? So much for the pleasure vaults of Assyrian. Solonates had no doubt that what he'd experienced by simply talking in the dim-lit cafe far superseded any delights of the flesh Graham and the others had experienced. Of course, she came tapping on his cabin door while he lay restless in his sleep cell, weary to the bone yet unable to rest. Of course, she came with words of reassurance. "Rest easy, Solonates. I ask no more than this of you." Of course, it was a lie. And she, lithe avatar of release, cast a shawl of tawny hair across his breast and stroked his brow, saying, "Look upon me, Navigator, with the eye that sees my soul." She removed his bandana and kissed the closed lid, bringing a fragrant memory of the lacrimata to his throat. She was so beautiful, and skilled with such dark voluptuousness that, in the midst of their lovemaking, he did open his eye. "Is this a woman?" he thought. "This that I see? Pure female. Her overlapping currents of spirit rivaling even the chaos of the warp. He had never thought to do such a thing before. No one had requested it. His eye was a danger as well as an intrigue. A glance could kill. Shivania, in her blindness, was immune. But she cried that she saw the light of him unveiled, his forehead shedding radiance, which she claimed shared the same brightness as the Emperor's own beacon. Heresy. Maybe. "If we only had a sample of the cargo," she said, close to his ear. "Think, Solonates, what ecstasy we could share." "Or what pain," he added. A shiver of presentiment summoned a vision of the next warp drop. He, alone in his pod, with the dark moving liquid of the lacrimata in the vaults below, singing its insidious song to the ever-vigilant powers of chaos. "You fear it," Shivania laughed. "Ice and passion of the wounded navigator." She stroked the scars on his chest and belly. "I envy your sight," she said. Afterwards, she curled into his arms, humming a strange little tune, running her fingers over his smooth white skin, reaching up to wind them in his long, fine hair. "Divine mutant," she said. "Hush, don't say that." "Well, you are, as am I, in truth. Both of us tolerated for our uses. Blessings upon our imperial father, and we may find solace with each other." "Sometimes, Shivania, I think you say dangerous things." He scorned him gently. "Faithful navigator, always quick to obey, to bend his back before the whip of imperial doctrine. Shivania!" He tried to ease himself away from her, suddenly feeling she had become a twining, suffocating thing. "What are you saying? Listen to yourself." "I have done that, for years," she said sharply. "Always listened to myself. From the day the black ship came and took me from my home." "You are an astropath, privileged, honoured. Your very soul is bonded with the Emperor's." She sneered. "A bonding that burned away my eyes. Bonding is another word for slavery, is it not?" Solonate shook his head in confusion. "I will not argue with you, but when you say these things, remember what your fate could have been." "And you think that this is any better?" She sat up, brushing back her hair. Her voice possessed the dry quality of some seasoned, jaded assassin, a woman whose flesh was laced with scars. Solonates reflected how you never came within a whisker of knowing someone until they'd shared your bed. "It's easy for you to be so complacent," she said bitterly.
a ship here, a ship there, flitting around, cushioned by the influence of your great family. What am I, in comparison a mere slave, leased out by the Scholastica? I do not choose my commissions, Navigator. Your life is your own. Mine.
She turned her face towards him, and the white eyes between their slitted lids looked snake-like. I belong to Phidias and his clan. My freedom aboard this ship is an illusion.
No good can come of this talk, Shivania.
She shrugged. Whatever. I have offended you, shocked you. For that I am sorry. I like you. Still.
She sighed, her voice taking on a wistful tone.
Perhaps it was a mistake to leave ship. I did not want to come back, you know.
Solonates reached to touch her. Forget this. Say nothing else. Come back to me.
Reluctantly, she curled against his side. Sometimes, she said, a great fear comes to me. I feel as if a depthless abyss waits to open at my feet.
Not for now,
Solonates whispered, and held her tight.
Graian Phidias supervised the stowing of his cargo, restlessly pacing the cargo vault as members of his crew carefully secured the crates. At Graian's insistence, Brother Gabrius came puffing down the access ramp, clutching a smoking censer of his recently purchased potent Assyrian incense and a handful of newly etched talismans to drape around the cargo.
"We can't be too careful," Graian said. "This stuff, for all its value, is a seductive substance. I am concerned what may occur should warp leakage steal its way inside the ship. Gabrius, I want the whole of the Brava consecrated again, every corner, every duct, every rune re-blessed and anointed. Is that clear?"
"As the bloom of a nebula, Captain. Never fear. Gabrius's unparalleled spirit will quell and subdue any effluvia seeking entrance."
Graian smiled and patted the priest's bulky shoulder.
"I know I can trust you, brother. Now I must hunt down our little communications system and ask her to transmit a message to my father. I intend to ask him to have a banquet ready for my crew, courtesy of Clan Phidias."
Gabrius grinned.
"You could breed whole generations of prime beef by the time we get home."
It had not gone unnoticed by Graian that some kind of carnal transaction was taking place between his navigator and his astropath. For some reason, this caused him deep discomfort. Shivania, he decided, had a streak of insolence inside her. Perhaps it was this that made him distrust her. Sometimes, when he issued a command, he sensed a wry malevolence in her expression, something about the mouth. It worried him she might alter the sense of his messages when she sent them, just out of mischief, to cause him embarrassment and inconvenience. Why should this be? Shivania might be a laser in comparison with Bassos's steady but small candle flame, but he could not bring himself to have faith in her. He also feared she might be bad for Solonets. After all, who knew what went on in the navigator's head? It was no secret he'd been horrifically wounded and had suffered a serious breakdown afterwards. Gomery had instructed him to treat Solonets with care. Look out for him. Graian felt his instincts bridle at the thought of the quick, incomprehensible Shivania having him in her clutches. He intended to speak severely with his father on return. There was no way he would have that girl on board again. The crew of a ship were an enclosed community, mostly removed from time and space itself. The universe rolled inexorably on without them. It was therefore intrinsic to the ship's well-being that the crew resonated harmoniously with each other. One jarring note and the whole delicate structure could fall apart, entirely the kind of occurrence that foul influences of the warp could get a hook into.
This possibility alarmed Graen more than that of engine failure or facing a warp storm. Dea Brava was his kingdom, and he was sensitive to its ambiences. With this in mind, a few days later, when they were approaching the jump zone into warp space, which would lead them finally back to Earth, Graen accompanied Solanates as he made his way to the blister, covertly assessing him for signs of strain and fatigue. "Did you get your neck seen to?"
"Huh? Oh, yes, Voss gave me a working over. It's fine now."
Graen pulled at his lip, standing on the access ramp and watching Solanets carefully as she shimmied into the confined space of the blister and eased himself into position.
"Sol, can I speak plainly with you?"
Solanets leaned sideways and peered down the ramp.
"Is that an order?"
"Sol!"
"Sorry. What is it?"
"Shivania."
"Oh."
Solanates began fiddling with the controls to the warp screen, his face taking on a mulish expression. Graen fidgeted uncomfortably.
"I have to speak, Sol, as friend and commanding officer. Be careful."
Solanates looked at him again, his expression guarded. He wanted to say, "What gives you the right to call yourself my friend?" but vented his annoyance with other words.
"I am not an invalid, Graen. I wish you'd stop treating me like some half-fuddled, incapacitated veteran. Quite frankly, much more of this, and I'll be forced to resign my position. I am quite over what happened. It has not made me vulnerable. I am an adult, and..."
"All right, all right." Graen raised his hands placatingly. "I had to speak. Appreciate my position."
"She knows you don't like her," Solanate said abruptly, once more adjusting his screen.
"Now that can't help the situation, can it?" Graen made a non-committal sound.
"At the risk of further tongue-lashings, just how serious is this business with you and her?"
"As serious as any relationship for people in our positions can be. We live for the day. I can't see it's any of your business, Graen. Have no worry that it will affect my work. Or hers. Now, if I could be allowed to get on with the business of warp flight..."
Graen shrugged, reached up and slapped Solanates' thigh in an assuaging gesture, before making his way back to the camera operati, where he would catch up with a little paperwork, leaving the Dea Brava in Solanates' care. The interview had not progressed exactly as he'd planned. Solanates sighed and settled back in his chair, blinking up through the blister at the streaming stars. If only Graen could know how he too had reservations about Shivania. Reservations, however, that could not compete with the temptation of her body, her sweet soothing of his own. He knew there was an undeniable shred of repulsiveness about her, as compelling as her attractiveness. This, he told himself, was simply because she came out with unwise, heretical statements from time to time. She was young, bitter. With guidance, she was sure to overcome her grievances. That her quick flashes of temperament could presage anything worse than dissatisfaction was unthinkable. She had been trained by the Adeptus Astra Telepathica. Their screening processes for removing tainted material was infallible. It had to be.
"It had to be,"
he said aloud, as he removed his bandana. The warp was quiet beyond the gate. Streams of pure immaterium boiled lazily on either side of the ship, but seemed unlikely to form themselves into maelstrom conditions. The warp screen showed no inconsistency. Solanates dared to hope this would be an easy journey. A few thought forms flitted in and out of materiality ahead, but they were minor omissions. Solanates recited a prayer to the Emperor to enforce his self-protection and banish all anxieties. It was important to maintain a serene psyche during warp travel.
He kissed his totems and fixed his concentration on the journey. A short jump. Dea Brava never ventured that far from Earth. Solonates began to hum a mantra, improvising the tune. It lifted his spirits and he drifted into sublime communication with the ship, becoming one with her body, faster than light, faster than thought, an exultant silver fish upon the bosom of this arcane sea. He breathed an essence of salt and spume, euphoric, riding the waves of the Astronomicon as it pulled him homeward. Salt, sea, dunes, dune flowers, flowers, fruit, musk, sandal. Sandal. Solonates gulped and was pulled into a momentary reality. He inhaled. What? By the Emperor's sweet blood, what was this? Lacrimata? Impossible! He consulted the warp screen, his head dizzy with the insidious perfume. The blister was full of it. A pulse glowed on the screen, signifying warp activity. But where? Solonates wondered frantically. Behind us? Before us? Where? So close! So close! He fixed his eyes towards the warp. Nothing definite, and yet a suggestion of imminence. The immaterium was excited. He scanned for chaos emanations. Perhaps something had clung to the ship. The screen seemed poised, waiting to bloom with information, denying him the knowledge. He strained his senses to penetrate the cores as the perfume flowed over him in delicious, wicked waves, perverting the purity of his concentration. His skin prickled with sweat. The cargo! A focus! He must ignore it, banish it. The scent was an illusion. He must...
Solonets.
A husky call. As a lance of pain pierced the muscle of his neck, the navigator's head whipped towards the access ramp. The hatch was opened, and there, creeping towards him, naked and glowing as a hot flame, was Shivania. Her mouth open, red tongue licking her lips, hair flowing like a cloud, her fingers idly stroking her breast. The perfume assaulted him in waves. He tried to speak. Shivania laughed and opened her shriveled lids. Had he thought those dead eyes milky? No. They were more than that. Opal, fiery, shifting with 100 colours.
Solonets,
she said, shaking her head so that her lustrous hair seemed like a nest of furred vipers.
Come to me. The essence is my flesh. It gives me life. I have anointed my eyes. I see. I see so much. I see you, Solonates.
No, he said in a strangled voice. He felt as if the very substance of the Dea Brava was melting before his eyes. All that existed was the pale, shining form of the astropath and the hideous seductions of the warp, waiting to take him in their final, everlasting embrace.
No, Solonates. What is this no? We are in our place, are we not? Mutants we. I can hear my sisters calling, vapours upon the warp tides. All those that die, Solonates, all those that die, you slide this ship upon a torrent of their blood. Open that great eye of yours and really see. Look at me. Touch me. Open the blister and take me home.
For a few moments, Solonates wondered whether he was hallucinating his own desires.
Is this what I want? What I've always wanted?
Then Shivania reached out a hand to touch him, her fingers flexing, curdled eyes blinking and leaking sluggish tears. She hissed and smiled.
I spit your seed into chaos, she cried, and lunged forward to throw herself into the blister upon him. Acting reflexively, Solonates winced back and then, with an extreme spurt of effort and will, pulled himself from his chair and flicked out his leg to kick the access way shut. He heard an agonized squeal and an infinity of violent colours smacked against his warp sight, bringing peals of agony, pain he could not have imagined in the worst of nightmares. His body writhed and his stomach convulsed. The surface of the blister was a swarm with foul shapes, all grinning, all scratching at the Plazcrist, telling him with sickening gestures of all they planned to do with his body when they reached it. Solonates tasted salt, knew he was biting his tongue. He slammed his head against the console, screaming, Phidias! Gabrius! Anyone! But the communications node seemed a million miles away, beyond his reach. Had the ship left its course? His eyes were blind to the route, seeing only a tangle of voluptuous shapes that beckoned and tempted, promising eternal pain, eternal ecstasy. He could hear Shivania scratching at the hatch, her voice a hoarse whisper of desire. My Lord Emperor! Solonates screamed. Help me! Help me! And then a pure strain of unadulterated thought forced its way through the melee. Take my hand, it said. I am with you, Navigator. Take my hand. And he focused on that beam, his consciousness flowing with it, melding with it, following. Although he knew in his heart the Emperor was cocooned within his palace on Earth, his aged, tortured body kept alive by machines, the Navigator's spirit saw a figure walking the Astronomicon's beam as if it was a shining path, leading the Dea Brava away from danger, dismissing the effluvia of the warp with the strength and the grief of its soul. A vision of his faith, maybe? But to Solonates, it was the Emperor himself, spirit walking in the void. Some moments later, he came to a kind of reality and realized the fluidium outside was quiescent, the warp screen clear of clots. There was no sound beneath the hatchway, and the fume of lacrimata had left the blister. He was Dea Brava, and they swam the wave of the Astronomicon, embraced by the spiritual essence of a thousand martyrs, swimming home.
Did you call me, Solonates?
Back in real space, Graen Phidias was at the blister, even before Solonates had unbuckled his safety harness.
I thought I heard a call, but the ship's mind told me otherwise. Even so, I thought I'd better check. Are you all right?
Solonates looked terrible, his white face slick with sweat, dark shadows around his eyes. He had not even replaced his bandana, just hanging there in his chair, like a corpse or someone drugged. The mutant eye stared dully at the warp screen, averting his gaze. Graen squeezed into the blister alongside him and gently tied the bandana back in place.
What happened? He asked. Sol?
He gave the Navigator a shake. Solonates shuddered, jerked, and then gulped air. Ship's air, faintly metallic, rubbery sweet, and thankfully free of perfume. He sighed and momentarily leaned against the captain. The instant was of silence, suspended heartbeats. Then he pulled away. Many die to keep the Astronomicon alive, don't they? He said.
Not unwillingly, you know that.
Phidias had a horrible dread. Solonates had suffered a further breakdown.
What?
Solonates shook his head quickly to silence him. No. The cargo. It has been tampered with.
What? Impossible. I would have been informed.
Nevertheless, what I say is true.
He was protected.
Solonates looked at him bleakly. Yes,
undoubtedly, as I am.
Always. Believe me, Graham, I am not mistaken. Phidias rubbed his face uncomfortably. You are ill, Solonates. Get yourself out of there. I'll take you to Floss. Solonates leaned back in his chair and uttered a low, bitter laugh.
Ill, am I? Take me somewhere where I can talk to you, Graham Phidias. Play the part of being the good friend you always profess to be. I have a favour to ask of you.
She was in her cabin, dressed in her finest robes, brushing out her hair. She wore her mask, the eyes unseeing, staring into nothing.
I thought you would come, she said, laying down her brush. Solonates didn't comment. I have something for you, he said. A gift. It is the best gift I can give you under the circumstances, Shivania. I know you will understand and use it wisely.
She accepted the gift, closing her fingers over the small crystal bottle. Her laugh was shaky.
Well, Solonets, there goes your bonus, I suspect. Such generosity.
Not generosity, Shivania. I loved you in a way. It is compassion. Merely that. A report will be made to the Scholastica when we return. You know what the verdict will be and its consequences.
You are tainted. You must know that you complained before about your lack of freedom. Well, if you reach Earth, your life aboard the ship will seem like paradise. They will send you to feed the Emperor's soul. Because of what we shared, I want to spare you that. Thank me. I grant you your dearest wish, a full draught of the Maiden of Oblivion. If you are lucky, for a moment you'll have the sight you craved.
He left immediately, and for a while Shivania sat motionless, the bottle held in her lap. She could not cry, no matter how much she yearned for that release. Her lips shook around the shape of his name. He'd possessed a strength she had not anticipated. To her, a hideous strength. Then she opened the bottle. A languorous, sensuous aroma filled her cabin, sweet with desire, poignant with loss. Its crescendo was the last damp fires of autumn before the winter's come. When all is burnt, the rubbish from the fields, the dead wood. She smelled dark earth and sensed a welcoming. Somewhere. With shaking hands, she tipped a little of the essence onto a single finger and anointed her throat. Moonskin, Lacrimata, Lady of Tears, Dark Sister. Not for the weak, oh no. As the siren scent rose around her in a final embracing cloud, Shivania tilted back her lovely head on her perfect neck and tipped the contents of the bottle down her throat. For a few seconds, her body sang, a manic dance of unendurable beauty and passion. But for a few seconds only. It was a swift death.
I know it is hard for you, Gabrius said. But you acted in the noblest way, Solonates.
The priest fondly patted the navigator's shoulder. They were sitting in his chapel vault beneath the lights of benediction. It had been a difficult confession.
Come now, lift your head, young man. Phidias is pacing outside like a brooding leopard. Don't give him cause for concern. Be strong.
Why, though?
Solonates asked helplessly.
Why her? She was so...
tainted.
Gabrius interrupted sharply. Believe it, Solonates. The Lacrimata was merely a catalyst, and a lucky one in the event. Worst could have occurred if you think about it. You bested the powers of chaos in your own way. No trivial feat, I assure you. No system is infallible. There will always be mistakes. The Adeptus Astra are thorough, but their dominion is vast.
Because of this, it is inevitable the odd blight slips through their screening net. It is true she might never have succumbed, and that the essence itself was the cause, but that is irrelevant, really. Live your life, Navigator. Forget her. In scant days we shall be home, and your family awaits you. He smiled. And don't forget the feast Phidias has promised us.
Solonates nodded, kissed the priest's belt, and backed from the vault. Graen was waiting outside, as Gabrius had told him.
One thing I have to know, Solonates said. The Lacrimata. Where is it bound? The Adeptus Terra would never allow such a substance to pass hands in the free market, surely. Who commissioned its purchase?
Graen Phidias scratched his neck, wrinkled his nose uncomfortably.
Well, Guido Palama is indentured to one department back on Earth. Just one. The dispersal of the perfume, the true Lacrimata, is rigorously controlled.
Who bought it, Graen?
He sighed.
The Inquisition.
Solonates laughed.
I should have known. An instrument of torture.
Hardly a matter for humour.
You think not? We live in a universe of contradictions, my friend, to our continual delight. Now, I suggest we repair to the Camera Recreata to toast our fair Earth when she reveals herself in the heavens. The Inquisition.
He shook his head.
You look better, Solonates, Phidias said bleakly.
The Navigator was already striding away up the passageway. He flung a remark over his shoulder.
Just a reprieve, my friend. Just a reprieve.
The Imperium abhors the mutant. But this story does a very good job of reminding us that the Imperium is almost entirely dependent upon the work of mutants. The key elements of interstellar travel, piloting the spaceships and communicating with those on other worlds, are only possible for those who technically fall beyond the bounds of the human. This would be another pleasing little piece of ironic hypocrisy for the setting, but I feel that Storm Constantine picks up on something very interesting in addition about this phenomenon, that these sanctioned mutants come in degrees. Clearly, when Shivania refers to Solonates and herself as mutants we, Solonates knows there is some truth in this. They are both outsiders within the wider world of humans. They both have a relationship with perception and the warp that gives them shared experiences. But it is also clear that status as a mutant carries different connotations for them both. The Navigator is broadly respected, even though the ship's captain finds making conversation with him awkward. The family that employs him values him, and indeed the literal noble key to which he belongs values him enough that when his body is damaged, he is repaired. Effort is made to return him to his original state. Ostensibly, an astropath is a similar kind of figure. They appear in the same section of the Rogue Trader rulebook that covers different branches of Imperial society. But whilst the Navigator's body has been repaired, the astropath's body has been warped, her eyes burnt out in order to enable her to serve her greater purpose. Not preserved, but rather hammered into a fitting shape. Whilst the Navigator follows his family's pathway into his appropriate calling, the astropath is ultimately at the whim of the quota. Shivania was on a black ship, a harvested psyker,
and if she had been on a ship with a different group of psychers of different abilities, or if the needs of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica had been different at the time of her arrival on Earth, then her fate could have been different, and she could have been fed into the Astronomicon as fuel for the Emperor. I've talked before about how, in the fantasy setting, the mutant can be a metaphor for queerness, and I think there is something of this sort in this depiction of these psychic figures, the metaphor this time being the gradations of acceptability within marginalized groups within the eyes of the mainstream. Navigators are seen as acceptable mutants, treated as crew members, even friends. They are like us, the nice professional masculine-presenting gay couple who have moved into the semi-detached down the street. The astropath, meanwhile, although ostensibly also permitted to interact with the mainstream, not a true pariah, is only there on the sufferance of her usefulness, and is viewed with suspicion and revulsion, acceptable only in a position that holds her at a distance and in her place. The queer person that society deems to be beyond the pale in their behaviour or appearance in this analogy. And one could see why someone who holds that position wants Solanates to admit that people like them belong in the warp, because it is better than the limitation society forces her to experience. But she is faced with a kind of tragedy, in that Solanates' experience of marginalization just isn't bad enough to make him want to join her. Indeed, he literally creates his own Emperor's voice within his head to help him get back to the safety of society. The best solidarity he can offer her is access to her own death. Yet I get the sense, however, when Solanates says he is only experiencing a reprieve from looking bad, that he is aware that he has betrayed his own kind. I worry that I might be pushing too much onto a story based around the backstory for little lead fighting spacemen, but when you think about this work being by Storm Constantine, who is most famous for writing a series of novels about Earth developing a new post-apocalyptic, post-gender, post-race species to rebuild the world, well, let's just say I think she would probably have been open to gender and sexuality metaphors in The Mutant. It's probably worth mentioning alongside this that only two named female characters appear in this story, Shivania and Dea Brava, the ship. And both Shivania, who Graham refers to as our little communication system, and the ship get spoken about as temperamental creatures who the men who associate with them have to manage and monitor. As an interminable debate about whether there should be female space marines grinds away on Twitter, it is interesting to see someone here writing about misogyny in this setting in a thoughtful and well-written way. Having made Shivania a sympathetic character so far, it is of course worth pointing out that opening the blister, as she wants Solanates to do, would have been a really bad idea and would have killed everyone. But I think the story plays with the power of pleasure and raises the question of whether constant preservation, which is something the Imperium espouses, is actually worth it, and that living, really being able to see, anointing your eyes, removing the bandana, experiencing the full pleasure of the drug, might be better than living out the decades constantly checking your amulets and being watchful for effluvia. On the subject of bandanas, this story set me wondering where the idea of navigators having a third eye came from. I knew it wasn't there in Rogue Trader, but is there in Ian Watson's Inquisitor stories, and my initial suspicion was that Watson himself had invented it, operating within the bounds of the idea that navigators displayed an array of mutant features. However, when I asked about this in the Oldhammer Facebook group, a guy called Rob, who runs a YouTube channel called Second Edition Wargaming, pointed out that the first place this idea appears is in White Dwarf 140, as part of the expanded rules for the starship battle game Space Fleet. This article, which had fluff on the background of the space fleet setting, really leans into the idea of the Dune navigators that 40K borrows from, and makes it clear that they are these creatures that are slowly evolving into something much more unhuman, but who ubiquitously possess a third eye. When I went and looked at the article, it became apparent that Lacrimata is, in essence, a space fleet story, as it is drawn quite intensely on the material in this article, not only for navigators, but for the way the Adaptus Astra Telepathica operates, right down to the concept of corrupted Imperial recruited psychers being referred to as tainted. This article appeared a little while after Deathwing came out, but it seems very plausible that GW would have given the writers on their projects all of the background that they were working on at that moment. So, thanks to Rob for clearing up that bit of chronology. Spacefleet is a fascinating little moment in GW's history, a game originally designed for younger players because an attempt to make a big-box space battle game had failed, and then upgraded again via White Dwarf to be a briefly supported Big Boys miniatures game. YouTubers Snipe and Wib have an episode explaining its history I would recommend. Lead Plague has some great painted models, and Rob's channel mentioned above actually features a battle report. All worth checking out. So, did I like Lacrimata? I thought it raised some interesting ideas and did some great stuff expanding how the setting works in practice. I loved all the stuff about one's anxieties and hopes taking form in the warp and the general psychedelia of it all. I think it got the hopeless feel of the Imperium, but addressed it in a fresh way. Where it falls down is that I feel like I wasn't as engaged in the characters as I might be, or quite as held by the pace of the plot, or by the central conceit of the titular drug. I found myself wondering if it would have been better with Shivania as a protagonist, allowing her a little more of her inner monologue, although I suspect the main problem was in part that her slide into taintedness was slightly mistimed in plotting terms. Nevertheless, it gave me lots to think about with the setting, which is always my main thing. Please feel free to comment on the show in the post in the Oldhammer Rogue Trader or Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay First Edition Facebook groups, or to leave a review if you are so inclined. Please tell friends if this is the type of thing that might interest them. You can also follow me on Twitter, where I post at Lewis Kerno about, well, history, this podcast, RPGs, miniatures, and Turnip 28. I wanted to apologise for the quality of the reading on this one, which wasn't quite as crisp as it usually is. As you may have spotted, I had a week off with illness, and I was probably still a bit slobbery. Also, I was trying for a more gravelly narrator voice when I do 40K stories, and that probably doesn't help with the clarity. Anyway, hopefully I will be clear as a bell in our next episode, when we return to a favourite Warhammer writer of mine, Nicola Griffith, with The Voyage South.